Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
We're picking all the apples because we're going picking. Well, apple picking. There's so many things you could pick, but we picked apples. At 720 WGN, 9 minutes after 8 o'clock, and from the Chicago Tribune, Corey Rumer. Good evening, Corey. Welcome back to WGN.
Happy Monday, John. Long time no chat.
Why, it seems like only yesterday. Actually, it was it was Friday. Oh, have you got some good stuff. Not just the stuff about the apple picking, but Corey has sprung upon all of us a retrospective of the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers. Oh, my God.
We're trying to remember better times for the Chicago Bears versus the Packers, right, John?
Yes, indeed. But let's wait till the second half hour to get to that. But he said twice, as I go through this exhaustive article on apple picking with your offspring. Now, how many different picking places did you apple pick with your son?
Okay, I only took my son, Boone Finley, I only took him to five because, as I write in the article, if you want to go apple picking, you've got to get far out of the city to get to, you know, land and trees and all of that. And it's hard to keep a seven-year-old in the car for an extended road trip. I mean, we bring everything we own with us to keep him happy and occupied. And he loves apple picking. So he can generally do like an hour and a half tops. And then, you know, like we can't go out to Rockford. That's just too far. Maybe in a couple of years we will. But so we try to keep it within an hour and a half of the city.
And how many different excursions did you go on then? I mean, you must have done this over a period of weeks then.
Actually, I think it was about 2 weeks. And it all started because my husband works on Sundays. My husband covers the Bears, incidentally, for the Sun-Times. So he's gone frequently, but he also does not like apple picking, and I blame that on his California roots. You know, it just wasn't a thing when they were growing up. You know, they don't have fall there like we have fall here, which I love and I miss when I moved away. Anyway, long story short, so Boone and I get in the car and we went to a place called Kuiper's, which is southwest of the city, and we just had a great time. And it was so funny because I started to, you know, I asked him, like, what types of apples do you want to pick and where do you want to go to get them? And his perspective on this was different than mine. And so I thought, how cute would it be if he and I wrote this together? I mean, you know, I wrote the majority of it.
Yes.
He just provided some quotes, but they are his quotes and his real feelings on each of the places we went to. So it was a lot of fun, and it's his first byline ever anywhere outside of school. So I'm pretty excited for him too.
A journalism career is born. Yes.
Oh God, no. Oh God.
Well, you've got them broken down into different categories, and as long as we were talking about your husband working on Sundays, best apple orchard to visit during a Chicago Bears game, Keller's Farm Stand. I mean, I just love the headline title. Why is this the best one to visit during a Chicago Bears game?
So this was, Boone and I got there last Sunday, a week ago Sunday, when it was pouring rain, and God bless the really nice people who work at Keller's. My son and I were the only people there who were visiting that day, and the rain had broken just a little bit, and so we said, hey, can we still go pick apples? And they said, sure. And so a nice guy who worked there walked us over, and he said, okay, if it starts lightning, like, you can't stay out by the trees. I said, okay, that's fine. So we picked quickly. We picked very quickly. And Boone's favorite thing to do at the farm stand was to shuck corn. So, that was the highlight. He really loved that. So it's like he's gonna be a good Midwestern boy. He's going to know how to shuck corn and pick apples.
But what? So it was just the rain delay that made this the best place to be during a Bears game, or they refused to show the Bears on TV, or I'm just still trying to figure that out. I mean, what makes it?
It was a combination of it pouring rain for most of the day, and also it was the first Bears home game of the season, so I thought, that's the perfect time for us to go and do something that's not football related. And sure enough, I don't know whether it was the combination of Bears game and rain that kept people away, but we had to play
Oh, wait a minute. As soon as you said Bears first game, that was more than rain. That was like the heavens opened. I was ready, you know, where's Noah? Where's the ark? Can I find the two of a kind? I'm ready to go. Holy mackerel, is it wet? Wow.
Yeah, that was the game with all the players doing flip and slide in the end.
Yeah. Well, no wonder it's such a good place to go apple picking. More with Corey Rumer. We're going to do apple picking, and then we're going to do the history of the Bears and the Packers. Coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. John Landecker with Corey Rumer. The first half of a rumor report that's going to last 60 minutes. That's what. Right now, right now we're doing tips from a 7-year-old and mom on apple picking. And where did it go here? Come on, John. My son and I went apple picking at 5 new places. Here are our thoughts and tips. And yeah, there's your name and also your son Boone right there. Yeah. Very nice.
You know, put him to work early, right?
You better believe it. So what would you say, just your general impressions of, because there's a lot of different apple picking orchards that you went to. What are just some general impressions that you had about apple picking now, and that your 7-year-old, what did he pick up on?
So he listened very intently. You know, before the break, we were talking about Kuiper's Family Farm out in Maple Park, and they did a really great job. They actually had somebody, so you'd sign in, you pay your money or whatever, you get a wristband. And they had somebody who told you, you know, how many different varieties they had, but also gave you instructions on how to properly pick an apple, which I had never heard at another apple orchard before. So I thought that was really great advice. And Boone was listening. He knew you're supposed to twist an apple off a branch instead of pulling it off a branch. I'm like, I've never heard that anywhere before. So he was listening everywhere. That was the first apple orchard we went to together. And for the rest of them, you know, he was twisting and he was keeping tabs on, he knew which ones we were supposed to pick, which ones we weren't supposed to pick. And now part of the reason I wanted to get the story online on Friday is because now it's Honeycrisp season, and Honeycrisp is the variety that, you know, everybody loves. Everybody wants to pick that variety. But we really found even the early ones, some of the early varieties that were available, we liked those too. And I say in the story, we, with our neighbors and our whole neighborhood, it's become a thing where we all make applesauce together. I know that sounds really like kumbaya-y, but it's something that we started doing during, you know, when COVID took over. It's like, okay, we can be outside. Sure. You we bet. Can mush apples together, and there are a lot of kids in our neighborhood, and everybody loves to do it together. And the guidance we have from our neighbors who have been doing this forever is, hey, you can pick whatever types of apples you want, just don't bring any Red Delicious. So that's another tip for anybody. If you've never made applesauce with your family before, don't bring Red Delicious apples to the table. Otherwise, pretty much anything else works.
They're just not conducive to saucing, so to speak.
It's just not flavorful. Yeah. It's just kind of like blah. And our neighbors, they love to cook. You know, I can't cook for anything. So it's like, okay, I trust your advice. If you say no Red Delicious, I will not bring any Red Delicious to the table.
So you went with your 7-year-old son Boone, and he shares the byline or the whatever the line is called in the journalism business in the Chicago Tribune. So let us get to some of his reflections, if you will. His favorite apple reminds him of a Pokemon something or other. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so I didn't know what Pokemon really was and any details about it, but this was something that he acquired with his buddies in first grade, and apparently it's, like, making the rounds again. It came out, like, 25, 26 years ago, and
yeah,
now...
Yeah, I didn't know it was back. No kidding.
You must not have a second grader, John.
You got that right.
So, yeah, it's making the rounds again. And so he liked the Gala apples because they were kind of yellow on top and red on bottom. He's like, look, Mom, it's a Pokeball. I'm like,
a
okay,
Pokeball.
Great.
All right. Yeah. Okay. And then there's this quote. There's a pumpkin eating dinosaur, and it's really cool when it sneezes. It sneezes smoke out of its nose. Quote the 7-year-old.
Oh, my gosh.
Where was that?
This is at Gobert's Farm, which I grew up going to Gobert's in South Barrington and getting pumpkins there. I had never been to, like, the actual Gobert's Farm that's in Pingree Grove. And so we went out there one day after school, and which is kind of a haul for us, but it was so great. They have an apple orchard that's, like, 5 or 6 years old. They have a ton of varieties. But I couldn't get Boone away. We went out there because it's an apple-picking story. We're going to go pick apples. But as soon as you walk through the door, you see this pumpkin-eating dinosaur contraption, and all the kids were just, like, mesmerized by this thing. And, yes, it blows smoke. It burps. It eats in quotation marks, pumpkins. But it was really cool. And so it was hard to tear him away from that and be like, dude, we're here to pick apples. We got to go. And he wasn't happy about that initially. But, yes, that seems to be the big thing that the kids love at the Gobert's.
Well, you would expect that the Apple Place knew that if they were going to construct a smoke-breathing, pumpkin-eating dinosaur when you came in to pick apples, that it was certainly take away somebody's attention from the apple picking. I mean...
Totally.
Who doesn't? Yeah, what 7-year-old boy doesn't like a smoking, a fire breathing, pumpkin eating dinosaur? I mean,
they
really
know their target audience, and they have a little farm store, and there are T-shirts with pumpkin eating dinosaur. There are there's a book, but there's also a sign that's, you know, you one of those photo opportunities where you stick your head through it and you take a picture of your cute kid with the pumpkin eating dinosaur on it. And they also, this is kind of funny, I didn't put this in the story, but when we showed up, the afternoon we showed up, they actually gave us some money back because we had paid a little, they thought we had paid a little too much because their giraffes weren't on site yet and weren't ready for us to go, like, feed and take pictures with. So I thought that was really kind of that damn giraffes, too.
Are you talking about real giraffes?
For real giraffes, yes.
Who has real giraffes on their orchard? What orchard was this?
So this is Gobert's Farm in Pingree Grove.
Oh.
And I don't think the giraffes are there year round. I think they bring them in for their fall festival. So they're only there. They're there like a month, you know, they're not out there during the winter or anything like that. But yeah, so it's like, you've got a pumpkin eating dinosaur. You've got a giraffe. So it's like, apple picking is kind of far down on the list when you go to that farm, but because there's so much to do, so much so that I had a promise, Boone, that we would go back and we'd do all the activities. So we're going to do that at some point.
You stay here, Boone. Mommy's going to go run a few errands. I'll be back in a couple of hours. You just play with the fire, the thing that's eating things there, and say hello to the giraffes. So
I like that idea. I like this idea. We can make this work.
What would you say would be, like, the average of all of your apple picking experiences, the average cost per orchard is? You know, they let you in, you get to pick how much, what do you pay, that kind of thing.
Sure. Okay, so Gobert's, if there's a spectrum, on one end of the spectrum, off to the left, there are mom and pop apple orchards out there that are open, you know, only like 3 or 4 hours on weekend days. And they don't have any of these wild activities. You go there just to pick apples.
Right.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have the go-verts with the giraffes and the pumpkin eating dinosaur. So I think we try to do a variety of places, but honestly, it's kind of hard. There aren't that many open during the week. I know last year, a lot of apple orchards had a hard time, you know, with their crop. That doesn't seem to be the case this year. There seem to be plenty this year. It's just a matter of timing and what your family likes to do. I have some other neighbors who went to Heinz Orchard, which I hear is a wonderful orchard. They have a lot of different heirloom varieties of apples. But yeah, you specifically go there to pick apples and that's it. So it kind of just depends on what you're interested in. And to go along with the five that Boone and I visited, I put together a list of 20, so 15 additional apple orchards that are within 100 miles of Chicago, a couple in Wisconsin, one in Indiana, some toward Rockford. They're kind of spread out all over the place. So you can go and see what you like best. Some charge an admission to get in the door. Like Gobert's charges an admission. And then if you want to pick apples, it's like $10 additional to get a little bag where you get like 2 or 3 pounds of apples. Other places don't charge an admission, but they offer a variety of, you could take home a whole bushel if you want to pay for a whole bushel. It just kind of depends on how many apples you need.
So where do people see this article,
Corey,
about the apples picking?
Sure. Go to ChicagoTribune.com and you should find it on the homepage, or you can search for my name, Corey Rumore, in Chicago Tribune, and it should pop right up.
All right. Speaking of Corey Rumore, we're going to do more with Corey Rumore. The look back on the ever frustrating relationship between the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers when we come back. Okay, Corey, this is epic. I'm telling you, this is epic. I can't believe the how. All right. This one you sprung on me. I did not see this coming, Corey. This is just the coolest. This is an entire history of the Bears and the Packers from, well, basically yesterday, which we can forget about, but all the way back to November 28th, 1921. So this is you down in the archives again, right?
And a trusty website called Pro Football Reference that keeps tabs on all of these types of things. But yeah, I just, a few years ago, I thought it might be fun to, you know, this was when the Bears were approaching 100 wins. Well, they're still trying to approach 100 wins in the series, but it was kind of like a race. Like, they have now faced each other. The Bears and the Packers have now faced each other 205 times.
Wow.
And a few years ago, we're like, who's going to get to the first 100 wins? And it looked like the Bears until about 2017, everything has been in the Packers' favor since then.
That's why I want to go. I don't want to go from now and go back. I want to go all the way back and come up to now, because I've had it.
Yeah,
with now.
Yeah, this is a more positive way.
We've all had it with now. Let's face it. Now doesn't get it. However, 1921, November 28th, Staley's whale Green Bay Packers for a 20-0 victory. So this is before the Bears were even called the Bears. Yes?
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, I think it was just about, the anniversary was just about a week or two ago, where George Halas was one of the founders of what would become the NFL. It was in an automobile showroom in Canton, Ohio, where they decided, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to play professional football. Because what I didn't realize until a few years ago, again, you know, I didn't know much about sports until I married into a sports reporter family. So I didn't realize that back then college football was the big deal. And the thought of playing professional football was, well, why? You know, what's the purpose of that? And so it's really due to George Halas and the Bears, who, you know, in 1921, they become known as the Chicago Bears. They moved to Chicago. And from then on out there, the Bears, it was really, I mean, my God, this is one of the greatest rivalries in sports. It's not the greatest for every person who lives in Illinois and Wisconsin. You know, it's something they hate each other. They hate each other, but at the same time, we kind of love each other. So I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, but, you're right. No, it's somebody to trash talk against and pass that along from one generation to another. Although I got to say, for any rivalry to maintain that term rivalry, there should be some kind of equality, winning and losing. And we're not, let's face it, the Bears are not holding up their end. There's no question about it.
That's exactly right. The last time the Bears beat the Packers, December 16th, 2018. Yeah. Jeez. Kind of a sore thing, a sore subject, right?
Yep, that's why I'm looking at the Bears' Patty Driscoll gaining 6 yards in the second half at the game at Soldier Field on December 19th, 1926. Look at that.
We have this really old picture that ran in our paper. I couldn't even find the original for this one, but it's like all snow and ice.
I know, but that's what's so great about football. I mean, the other night, you know, the first game was a deluge. You went apple picking. But they didn't stop the game because of all that intense rain. Now, they would have stopped it if there was lightning. But baseball, but football plays in all kinds of weather, unless there's some threat to you. Whether you can see the field or not is sort of not going to be a factor. We're going to play the game. And you've got the highlight of the decade in 1932 is Bronco Nagurski slides 56 yards to the end zone.
56 yards. He just slid. I know. The way I wrote that sentence, it sounds like, he just slid forever and ever.
But the field was ice. I mean,
it was total ice. And the weather was so bad that it forced a playoff game that had to be played inside Chicago Stadium. And I remember when it was the Bears' 100th season, Virginia McCaskey talked about this, how she remembered going to this indoor game in Chicago Stadium and how it smelled. I think a circus had been there. And so she talked about how it stunk in there. I mean, isn't it fascinating?
Totally. I wasn't even aware that the Bears played indoors anywhere at any time. But
that's the only time I know of here in Chicago that they played. They had to play indoors.
But by the way, this 1930s highlight, December 11th, 1932, that game was played at Wrigley Field, and the Bears won 9-0.
9-0. Yeah, it's like, how did they get to 9?
3 field. Corey, you're married to a sports reporter. It's 3 field goals, I would guess.
I'm not good at math, John.
Come on now. Come on.
I was thinking more complicated than that.
Did they not
get the point after? What happened there?
All right. I'm not going to have time to get through this entire.
That's okay.
We'll send people
the website. They can go to the website.
That's what I want you to do. Where do we go to find all of it?
You can go to chicagotribune.com and you can go to our Bear stuff, chicagotribune.com/sports/Bears, and it should be right there.
I'm moving on to the low light of the decade, November 2nd, 1941. The Packers apparently upset the Bears 16-14 at Wrigley Field, and there's a note here that says, a monster upset causes 9 reported heart attacks.
This is what I love.
That's so random.
I love having access to the Tribune archives because these are the types of things you find when you get through the stories, you go past the first couple of paragraphs. And we reported that there were apparently 9 people who had heart attacks as a result of this game. Now, whether it's true or not, who knows, but it certainly sounds interesting.
Are they implying that these people had the heart attacks at the game itself? Is that what they're...
I'm scrolling through the story right now. It doesn't say. I got to go to the jump page. Oh, it makes me...
It's okay. Well, it's a cliffhanger.
Let's see.
There's nothing wrong with cliffhanging. Don't worry about it.
I know, this is the hard part with live radio. I mean, anything goes, right?
We are talking to a journalist in action. Her name is Corey Wilmore. She is now within the archives of the Chicago Tribune. delving her journalistic expertise for our broadcast as we speak. We'll give her a moment and then return on 720 WGN. But you still got to beat the Packers. 720 WGN, John Landecker at 848 on the line with Corey Ramor from the Chicago Tribune, who has delved into the archives to take a look at the lowlights and the highlights of that longstanding Bears-Packer rivalry. And I'm just randomly going through it. And, you know,
okay,
we talked
about, John, I found before the break, we talked about that 1941 game with the heart attacks.
Yes.
We had a story about it on the front page the next morning. There were two people confirmed who died from heart attacks who had been watching the game. One who had been at the game was the wife of Frank Halas, the sister-in-law of George Halas. She apparently collapsed in the press box during that game and was taken away and later died. That's awful, right?
So yes, bad. Totally. It's just a game, right?
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah. Maybe not in the Halas-McCaskey family, though. Okay?
Maybe not. Wow. There were some very cool things that I didn't realize that... that William the Refrigerator Perry, who you're too young to know.
I'm not that young.
Yes, you are. He weighed 335 pounds, the fridge. And it was a big deal because he got on the team and they went to the Super Bowl and all that.
Right.
And he was the first 300-pound player to score a rushing touchdown, and he did it against the Packers?
Against the Packers. I didn't really know that.
Neither did I. That's a great trivia item, you ask me. Considering everything that went everything that went on that year with the Bears, that the fridge scored that touchdown against the Packers. And then maybe there's a guy named Devin Hester. Maybe you do remember Devin Hester.
Yeah. I remember him too.
when was this? September 10th, 2006. He became, well, you can confirm this with your husband. He became one of the greatest kickoff returners in the history of the NFL. And when he was a rookie, he returned a fourth quarter punt. I'm just telling you your own article. Returned a fourth quarter punt, 84 yards for a touchdown. That was the very first punt return touchdown of his career. Lambeau Field. Yes.
Woo-hoo!
I mean, see, it's not all bad news. It's just bad news recently.
And you know what? I was watching the game last night, John, and that first drive when the Bears scored, it was like, whoa, okay, this is promising.
Yeah, and the announcers are going, how about these Bears? These young Bears, they don't know any better. Look at them. This is really great. They're young. Wow. Well, that was fine. It lasted at least for one touchdown.
I know.
Hey, Corey.
At least they got one.
Corey, it's Steve in the newsroom. Can I ask you kind of an overriding question?
Sure.
Overriding? Yes.
Well, and I may get pelted when I leave the station tonight, but I was listening to a commentator, an NFL Network commentator, that basically said, I don't see why these Bears-Packers games are featured anymore. Like on Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, the rivalry. He called it a lopsided rivalry basically said it hasn't been an exciting game, except for Green Bay, in a long, long time. He doesn't think they should even be featured on national TV.
This is an interesting question, because I'm curious what the ratings were last night. I mean, why would you make it the Sunday night game if it's not worth it? Somebody's profiting off of that.
I just told you what I heard, and I have to say it kind of made a little bit of sense. He was saying it hasn't. This is what he said. He said, how many times do we need to see the Packers beat the crap out of the Bears on national TV? I'm just reporting what I heard.
No. Yeah. I understand that. And as I said earlier, I mean, for something to be considered an actual rivalry, there should be, you know, some winning on both sides, and there hasn't been any from the Bears in a long time. But this is something that goes beyond all of that. I'm pretty sure Corey, you made a great point. I don't know what the TV ratings are, but I'm pretty sure they were big because it's the Packers and the Bears. And that's that.
Yeah.
And that's all you really have to say. And I'm sure, I mean, I don't know about the ratings around the country, but I'm sure Chicago ratings were, you know, way up there. And there's not that many people in Green Bay anyway. So, I mean, who knows,
people other than Green Bay are watching that game.
Who knows what constitutes a high rating in Green Bay? No, I'm making a joke. I mean,
I will say, I just looked something up that says there were 15 million viewers fewer for last night's game than the week before, but the week before was Bucks Cowboys. I mean, it was Tom Brady, it was Dak Prescott,
near SCTE Sports,
and I'm not very good at this. Most of what I know about sports is osmosis at this point. But yeah, it sounds like the viewers were down, but still significant.
A loss of 15 million, that's a loss. That's not insignificant. So maybe you got a good point there, Steve. I mean, I would think that after the first touchdown, the ratings were up. But then as time went on,
it got bad very quickly.
Yeah, and then when it deteriorates, nobody wants to see a lopsided victory.
I put my kiddo to bed after halftime, and when he woke up this morning, he's like, "So who won?" And I said, the score really didn't change all that much, you know, after halftime. So
I told my wife, I said, Packers won. She goes, yeah, what's the other news? She wasn't surprised. She's like, yeah, well, that's pretty much how it's been for a long time.
That's true. And then, you know, Corey's son wanted to go back apple picking. So forget this football. That's not going anywhere. I'm getting my apples picked.
Smart boy.
He is a smart boy.
Maybe we should put that on TV.
Yeah. Corey, thanks for being with us again. It's always great talking to you. You know that.
Good
I
night,
love it.
Guys. Right back at you. Same here.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Play-by-play apple picking.
Yes.
Could be a ratings winner. Probably not.
No, I don't think so. But, hey, you know what? There's so many. They have bags, or as some people call it, bean bags or cornhole. They cover that. So
has that been on national TV?
Yes, it has.
It has?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God. Yeah, you should hear the announcers attempting to make it sound like it's an actual sport.